Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, Newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, Newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at Newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Do you think you are part of that 75%? I really didn't think that I would be, but when asked to list out all the subscriptions I paid for, one or two slipped through the cracks that I totally forgot about, one of which was for something that I swore I canceled forever ago. Think about it. Between streaming platforms, apps, delivery services, and even parenting/kid subscriptions, though they all seem like small amounts, when pulled together, that's a pretty big chunk of your spending money out the door. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting time on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/morningcup. That's rocketmoney.com/morningcup. rocketmoney.com/morningcup.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning. Cup of murder.
When you hear about random, bloody, incredibly violent crimes, you automatically assume they happened under the cover of night or in someone's home. This, however, is not always the case. On March 23rd, 1988, a young woman was killed in broad daylight. And yet, somehow, no one saw anything of use to try and capture the killer, nor helped when they heard the sounds of a, quote, commotion. So, if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. Deborah Lindsley, Debbie to those who knew her, was born in Bromley, Kent in 1962, to a retired insurance broker and a fraud investigator for the Department of Social Security. Moving out of her parents' home in 1988, Debbie began working and living in Edinburgh as a hotel manager before returning to London to attend a hotel management course. Staying with her parents for the time being, she often went to visit her brother Gordon, who, in 2 weeks' time, was going to be married. And Debbie, the proud and loving sister, would be standing nearby as one of the bridesmaids. At least, that's what the plan was until tragedy struck on March 23rd, 1988. Just 26 years old at the time, Debbie, getting a ride from her brother, arrived at the Petswood station that afternoon and boarded the Orpington to London train at 2:16 p.m. Making a number of stops along the way, the train was slated to arrive in Victoria by 2:50 p.m. However, sometime between boarding and her intended stop, something truly horrible happened to young Debbie Lindsley. Sitting in carriage number 15084, Debbie was in a compartment that could sit 12, and though it had doors on each side opening to the outside, there was no means of moving from compartment to compartment where she was. Likely chosen because it was one of the few where smoking was still permitted, when the train arrived at the Victoria platform, a porter, as was customary, walked through the train and found on the floor and seat what appeared to be a pool of blood. Debbie Lindsley had, at some point during the 31-minute ride, been stabbed 11 times in the face, neck, and abdomen. With five of those landing around her heart, any one of which would have been fatal, There were signs that she fought valiantly against her attacker. In fact, she fought so hard that when tested, they were able to determine that some of the blood found in the train belonged to her injured killer as well. There was no apparent motive for the attack. As far as everyone knew, Debbie had no enemies, and with all of her possessions still found on the train, robbery was ruled out entirely. Believing that the murder was sexually motivated, and believing that Debbie fought back and prevented the killer from raping her, police wondered how a murder could occur on a busy train in broad daylight without any real witnesses. Appealing to anyone who was on that same train ride to come forward with even the slightest bit of information, Debbie was laid to rest on April 22nd and buried wearing the bridesmaid's dress she was supposed to wear to her brother's wedding. With the Metro Police's senior investigating officer calling the crime, quote, savage and brutal, he claimed that because the compartment Debbie was traveling in had no corridor other than the side doors that led to the track itself, she had no means for escape and was stuck there with her killer. Her mother claimed that she was incredibly security conscious, carried a rape whistle, and knew the dangers of getting into those closed compartments alone. But for reasons unknown, that's exactly where she ended up that day, leading many to wonder if, when she got on the train, there were other females sitting inside the carriage that made her feel more comfortable. Ones who got off along the way and then left her alone. However, no witnesses ever came forward and no one said that they were in the compartment that day of the murder. Though they were slowly phasing out these types of carriages, within a week of the murder, it was announced that a number used on the off-peak journeys, like the one that Debbie was on, would be reduced to minimize a chance of isolating passengers, and a red band was painted over the contrail of the coaches without corridors to allow for easy identification. Back investigating the murder, officers believed that, with the ferocity of the attack, this was likely not the killer's first murder, and the short distance and time frame for the attack itself led them to wonder if Debbie actually knew who her attacker was. Though no one on the train actually saw the attack firsthand, there were 70 individuals who boarded and departed by the time it arrived in Victoria, and a number of people in the many train stations where it stopped. Like the French au pair, who reportedly heard loud screams soon after the train departed Brixton. Based on what they heard from these witnesses and the 1,200 statements taken, the police created a list of individuals who they hoped to follow up on. Amongst these persons of interest was a passenger seen jumping from the train at the Victoria station, a man seen leaving the compartment at Penge East and reboarding, possibly, into Debbie's coach, a man who was seen exiting the platform inside Victoria with a scratch on his cheek, though this might have been from a football scuffle, and a man seen staring at women boarding the train in Orpington. However, after questioning 650 individuals and ruling all out, the case began growing cold. The best they could do was release a photo fit of the man the au pair noticed getting off the train in Victoria, a man described as about 40 years old, well-built, muscular, and with a mustache. But despite the case receiving national attention, including a reenactment on Crime Watch, the killer, even now, remains unknown. Then came an inquest in November of 1988, in which the au pair was criticized by the coroner for not pulling the communication cord upon hearing the screams, as were the passengers who heard a, quote, commotion, but never investigated. And when the verdict came back, it came back as unlawful killing. Guards were ordered to proactively patrol trains, keeping an eye on women traveling alone, and police advised everyone to remain vigilant on the railways in general and to avoid the carriages like the one where Debbie lost her life. Things remained quiet while experts waited for DNA advancements. A profile was built from the blood left on the train. The case was officially reopened in 2002, and it appeared on Tonight with Trevor McDonald on September 13th. With detectives suggesting that the killer was hurt after the attack and may have behaved differently as the case made its way into the media, they urged friends and relatives to come forward, even all these years later, with any suspicions that may match their timeline. Despite all of this, though, the case remained at a standstill, and police wondered how the DNA sample they had, when run through their database, never came up with a match, despite the fact that the killer likely was a repeat violent offender. Not even a hefty reward of £20,000 was enough to provide any new leads. The case, as far as I can tell, remains an active one, no closer to being solved. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to A Terrible Thing Happened on March 24th. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there's always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.